Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with another episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos. Inside sports, fantasy football, the Lakers fast break. Plus, if you could like, share, and subscribe, follow, whatever you can do, it is sincerely appreciated by all of us here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. And big shout out to each and every one of our radio stations indeed as well. But also here today is a good man indeed. He is the mastermind behind Happy Hoarder Collectibles. It is Josh the Great Peterson. Josh, great to have you here. Looking forward to great conversation. We have been binging hard and binging for you out there to give you the update of what's going on in the world of pop culture.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I've watched quite a few things lately, you know, which is weird for me because it's been a while, you know, since I've sat down on the couch and been like, oh, I'm going to watch these shows. But now it seems like I have a steady schedule of shows to watch. Every time they drop a new episode, like I know what day it comes out and I'll watch it. So nice to be catching up on things.
Oh my gosh. And so much to catch up on with us here on the show. As we're going to be talking about a ton of things, and I'm hoping I'll remember it all with Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, House of the Dragon, Alien Romulus, Halo Season 2, Masters of the Air, The Gentlemen, Three Body Problem, Shogun, X-Men 97, Roadhouse. Of course, we'll face the franchise with Ghostbusters, and we'll pay a special tribute on the end of the show as well. But my friend, just to give everybody an update what's going on at the weekend box office before we get into the nitty-gritty with what's going on in the world of television, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire came in right around expectations by Sony, a little tick higher, actually a little tick higher than the Ghostbusters Afterlife, the previous film. Came in around $46 million domestically. It cost about $100 million to make, so it needs to do a little bit more before you could say it's going to be break even or a little bit of a profit, but it is not as dire as what many had feared would be the case, because the reviews came out and were decidedly mixed to below average, my friend. So your thoughts before we really get into facing the franchise a little later on with Ghostbusters, and we'll tie this in later, just some quick thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Yeah, it actually really bummed me out that the reviews were scoring so low for this one. I saw IGN gave it like a 4 or something, if I... Yes. Remember correctly, but I don't know. I was kind of bummed because like I really enjoyed the last one. Honestly, the trailers for this one look cool too. I don't know what people are expecting from a Ghostbusters film though. Like I don't, you know, everyone's like the reviews were saying you can't rely on your old cast to make a movie great, but that's just what people want. You know, like I don't know what the everyman is saying about the movie, but to me it sounds like it's a, I don't know, fun ride, I guess.
Maybe nostalgic. It does have the original Ghostbusters in it playing a meaty role. So they do get their chance. I do know, again, it's decidedly mixed as far as what the social media word has out there from what I see as well. And of course, the Metacritic score is not favorable. But then again, if it is something of your ilk, please go ahead and check it out. It is not receiving the hate, the universal hate of Ghostbusters 2 from what I remember back in the day, because again, that movie was all about hate and anger. That was the angriest, hateful movie I think I've ever seen, where just everybody in that movie was full of anger and cynicism. It just was not a pleasant movie to watch. So as long as this movie does not go that down that same road, I think, you know what? It's okay. Let's go ahead and do with it what it is. I guess, again, Sony met its expectations. So break even. It's not a bad thing necessarily.
No, absolutely not. And I have yet to watch the movie, but I feel like the expectations for it are set a little bit too high, considering, you know, that it's it's the fifth movie in a franchise that started back in the 80s.
That's true. It is the fifth movie of the series, include the Paul Feig directed one last decade as well. So yeah, absolutely looking forward to seeing if they'll go ahead and continue the franchise. Personally, I will probably not see it until it hits television. So we'll see what happens there. It is, of course, Ghostbusters, but later on, we'll discuss the Ghostbusters IP as a whole, the hits and misses of it, and we'll see if it still has that fire as far as what the original Ghostbusters created. So we'll go ahead and talk about that coming up later on the show as well. But we've got a ton, absolute ton of television to talk about and trailers to talk about as well. I saved a couple for you, my friend. In fact, I saved one that did a couple in House of the Dragon. I didn't give everything to Melinda. I made sure I evenly distributed the trailers that were shown off last week, my friend. So House of the Dragon, it gave you a choice, my friend. It gave you the choice. Would you go with Targaryen or would you go with, of course, you need to choose, my friend. So you need to choose which one that you're going to go ahead and check out. So I want to hear your thoughts. With the dueling trailers, for you, was it Rhaenyra or as far as Aegon the Second?
I don't know. I'm more of a Targaryen fan myself. I know their love story is a little weird, or not love story, but their story is a little weird.
Well, they're both from the house, both the House Targaryen, so they're both.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm more partial to that story myself. I don't know. I've always, even when reading the Game of Thrones books, I've always been fascinated, like when they go into a little bit of the history of the Targaryen family. So, I mean, we all know what their fated, what their ultimate fate is, but I don't know, it's just been a fun ride getting there. And in the first season, I did not actually enjoy the, I liked the Targaryens more than I enjoyed watching the other family rise to power.
I just wonder the amount of blood as far as the budget that they set for it is going to be higher or lower than season one, because season one's budget for blood, my friend, was as far as fake blood, of course, was very, very high. So I'm interested to see if they'll just gush out all the blood this time around, my friend.
Oh, I'm sure they will. That's why people watch the Game of Thrones shows, right? It's shock value. It's not, I mean, you look at it, yeah, at its core, it's a decent story, but people watch it because they don't end the night talking about like how great the story was. They end the night talking about, oh, did you see what happened in this death scene, or did you see like who had an affair with who in this, like they talk about it for the that type of thing. They don't, you know, that's what makes the show what it is. That's what makes the following so large for that.
Well, we'll see what happens. It is coming out in April. It is, of course, House of the Dragon season 2. So actually, I'm sorry, it's coming out in June, June 16th. It's still a ways away on HBO and, of course, Max. That will be available as well. So season 2, June 16th, coming to HBO and Max. But also there's more coming up before we hit the break. I want to go ahead and ask you, as an Alien fan that you are, I'm trying to hit you up with things I know that you have a preference in as far as House of the Dragon, but also as well, Alien. You are very familiar with that franchise. And we were just talking about Ridley Scott before we went on the air. Alien Romulus debuted its teaser trailer. It's only a minute long, but of course it has that, you know, aliens coming out at you, of course. Your thoughts on Alien Romulus and if this will be a return to greatness for this Alien franchise?
I am feeling with Alien, I'm feeling a lot like I'm feeling with Star Wars. We don't want to just see the same things over and over again. Like I know I have talked about Prometheus till I'm blue in the face. I enjoyed it. I loved seeing the origin of the Xenomorphs and seeing where it was going. And then I remember we talked about Alien Covenant, how they just went right back to what they did before. And we have seen it. How many times have we seen that? What, four times through the other Alien films? And also, you know, six, I guess, arguably with the Alien versus Predator films. So I'm sitting here watching this trailer and I'm thinking to myself, what are you going to show us that we haven't already seen so many times before? Because all I'm seeing from the trailer are people running around a ship, a Sigourney Weaver type, you know, female character with a gun facing off against xenomorphs. What is different about this movie? Why should I go watch this movie if you're not going to really give me a better story than what has already been told?
And I've been told that, you know, the director is supposed to be this, perfect fit for this franchise. And, you know, again, I'm hoping it will be, because I've checked out of Alien and the Alien franchise a ways back. I know we'll be covering on Face of the Franchise when Alien Romulus comes out. I know that's going to be a IP that you definitely want to cover at that point in time, my friend. I know we can go deep back into it because, you know, the earlier parts of Alien, absolutely fantastic parts of the cinema franchise and cinema world at that point in time, and defined the late 70s, early 80s, and also as well the mid 80s with both Alien and Aliens. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on them when you face the franchise. But Alien Romulus, that is the trailer's trailer did drop. Hopefully you will get a chance to check it out when it comes out. I believe that's going to be a Hulu. Is that going to also be Disney Plus? Do you know?
It's actually going to theaters first. So it's going to do a theatrical run. And then okay. I imagine they're going to drop it because they're experimenting right now with Hulu. I don't know if you've noticed with Hulu shows crossing over into Disney Plus. So you can go into Disney Plus and put in a show like Shogun or whatever, and it'll come up in the Disney Plus list.
I saw that. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, because it's, like you said, it made debut in theaters, but it's a TV series. So we don't want to get that mixed up with people in there. It is going to be an episodic.
No. So there's two. There's Alien Romulus, and then there's an Alien show that's coming out.
Okay, it's two different ones. Okay, so yeah. Fede Alvarez is doing both. Is he involved? No, Holly is involved with the TV show, and Fede Alvarez.
That's supposed to be a prequel, and they're saying they're scrapping what happened in Prometheus for that, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, see, again, you've got me all mixed up, my friend. Again, you're the Alien fan, I'm not, my friend, so...
Yeah,
and, I mean, I've already have with the X-Men and the Fast and Furious franchise already way too much mind blown confusion in those franchises to have to follow another confusing franchise.
Yeah,
and it sounds like I'm going to have to be confused again with Alien.
My gosh, right? Yeah, I'm just waiting too. Like they're gonna probably end up doing the same thing with a lot of the movies, you know, that we enjoyed from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, we just saw this week debut a movie that was a retread from the 1980s, and I'll go into that later on today with Roadhouse. But Alien Romulus is a movie, feature film from Fede Alvarez that's coming in August 16, 2024. And then also in production is a FX Hulu TV series from Noah Hawley that is coming up later on. So definitely looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with both. And like you said, if they start canceling out things and rubbing out things that they've already done, first of all, A, you will probably piss off Ridley Scott. And B, you'll confuse longtime fans such as yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, we like I've said before, move forward, take the story forward. You know, we don't want to keep seeing the same things over and over again. Star Wars, again, prime example of that. Just move forward, go to another place, tell another story. We've all seen the recycled storylines over and over again, and we are tired of it.
That tells me you're not going to be watching The Acolyte set in the High Republic era 50 years before Phantom Menace.
Maybe. I've been made curious by the trailer, so I might give it a whirl. But just give me something new. You know, go tell a new story. You want to make future generations interested in Star Wars? Create a story like where it starts, like with what people in the late 70s, early 80s got with the original Star Wars. Like that was the genesis of that franchise.
I can't say I blame you, my friend, but it is Alien Romulus that is coming August. There is a TV show also in development. So the Alien IP has still got plenty of legs. And I will tell you that during that period of time when the movie comes out, I know Josh and I will be covering it as far as the IP and taking a closer look in Facing the Franchise as well. But if you have thoughts on the House of the Dragon, which trailer did you choose first? You got to let us know on that one. Plus also is Alien Romulus still getting you excited for the Alien franchise? And did you get a chance, like also as well, I want to mention Dylan. Dylan on Twitch, he got a chance to check out Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and liked it. Did you like Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? Do you think we should call Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. for the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts.
My friend, there's much more to talk about on today's program. I do want to go into, before we start, anything else on the TV talk, my friend. We got to talk about Halo. We have to talk about Halo. Season 2, I called Halo Season 1 a dumpster fire, a flaming poop. I think the year, I put it on my worst of list the year that it came out, and I believe you did as well. It was absolutely terrible. And this, you know, they obviously changed showrunners is what they did, because I think there was universal backlash, even though it was very popular. Season 2's come out, and we thought it was getting better. We thought it was getting a lot better. Episode 4, with the fall of Reach, probably was the closest thing to what fans, longtime fans and longtime followers of the Halo universe, had envisioned for this show in recreating something spectacular in the Halo franchise. Absolutely terrific episode. One of the best episodes of television, period, I've seen this year. And I've seen a lot of television, especially in the last 2 weeks. But, my friend, talk about diving off a cliff. I felt like I was a cliff diver in Acapulco, because they just dove off the cliff. They jumped the rails. They jumped the shark. Because after that, it went belly up again. They followed the same bad habits they did in season one. It absolutely atrocious storytelling. There were side stories I didn't care or didn't want to know about. They turned the Flood into the zombie movie of the week. And then talked about the cartographer in 343 Spark. He didn't have the same kind of voice as he does in the video game. And I really thought that was a bummer. Because even though I knew exactly who it was before they actually had 343 Spark come on screen, it was still a very dubious introduction. And the battle between the climactic battle between John 117 and Master Chief and the Arbiter was dizzying, to say the least. The camera effects in that fight were dizzying. So your thoughts, my friend. It went from such a high of highs with the fall of Reach. I really think they should have elongated this season and ended the season with the fall of Reach. Had they done that, I think they would have been a lot better for themselves. But instead, they had to do the rush. They rushed through it. And I think they ultimately paid the price for it, my friend.
It seems to me like this show lost it. Like you said, it's going strong. The Fall of Reach was an excellent episode. Like, this was I kept wanting to see what happens next after the Fall of Reach, you know, and then the episode that followed was like, got really slow. The pacing was bad. Yeah. It seems like after that episode, the show lost its identity. They couldn't tell exactly what they wanted to be. Do they want to be a drama piece? They want to be like an exploration, a show about it, like an Indiana Jones style thing,
because they had supernatural stuff going on.
Supernatural, yeah, and they had the you know, like you said, with the zombie stuff. I will say that the way they painted the Flood spores, like when they, you know, crawling out of people's eyes, like that was pretty cool. But yeah, I didn't like the whole, you know, zombie type thing. It reminded me too much of 28 Days Later, and that's not how the things were in the game. Like, at least keep the original noises they make, the little whatever it is, you know. But yeah, you know, I ultimately agree with you. I would not rate it like as low as it's been getting. I would say it's like a 7.57 for me, somewhere in there.
I would give it a 6. Since I gave the other one a well below 5, I'm going to give this one a 6 only because of one episode. It was so fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an overall improvement from the first season, that's for sure. But yeah, there was a lot of things in there that didn't need to happen. There's a lot of things in there that just felt like they're forcing it down they're spoon feeding it to you instead of like letting you come to it organically, you know, if that makes sense.
It does.
And I don't know. They crafted a lot of storylines for characters that just didn't finish. you know, the whole thing with Saren, whatever his name is, and his wife, the whole thing with what's his name, the guy, right? The guy that got put in charge of the Spartan program. I can't remember what his name is.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes. The Oni head, the head of Oni.
Yeah. And then Perrin Goski, like her whole role in this didn't make sense. And the chief going and helping what the other Spartan, I forget what her name is. I guess that goes to show you what kind of shows are. Yeah. Kai, I don't remember Kai. His name.
But, and Quan Ha, you know, her storyline has never been good the entire, you know, she seems like a good actress, but what she's been given in two seasons, absolutely forgivable. Yeah.
So here's with her, here's my ultimate fear with her is that they're going to give her something. They're creating something out of nothing. Like, is she sitting there talking to the old lady, the flood, like holds still for her. Is she talking to the grave mind? Is she talking to the librarian? Like, is this lady the librarian, or is she talking to like the precursors in the book or the things that ultimately formed themselves into the flood? So who is she talking to? Or are they just going to make something up? Because right here, like you mentioned with the supernatural type thing, they're creating the potential for something that's really going to piss people off, you know.
And Maquis, the sympathizer, you know, with the Covenant, you know, how she is a main role. I know a lot of people have issues with her because she's a totally created character for this.
And she's
series.
Annoying. She's annoying.
I mean, like you said, Perignoski became the head once again. You thought James Ackerson as the head of O&I was the real bad guy, but he turned out to be not the real bad guy after all, even though he was doing basically paint by numbers bad guy things. And it was just, again, it hit the high of highs, the fall of Reach. I wish they would have spread that out over the course of a full season and had the Fall of Reach be the end of season two. I think it would have been a much better season if it culminated in that, my friend.
Or have the Fall of Reach happen and then show that like intro piece to Halo, you know, where all the ships go out of slip space and then boom, there's the Halo, and then just end it right there.
Yeah.
That would have been great. Instead of going to the Halo with 20 minutes left of the last episode.
Exactly. I mean, you got mad at Dune Part 2 for having a very minuscule battle on screen. And I would say the same thing to you in kind about Halo at that culminating episode, which a lot of those back episodes were culminating to this battle. And again, like you noted with Dune Part 2, it was a very small and anticlimactic battle that pretty much ultimately didn't mean diddly squat, because it was supposed to be this big bomb that was supposed to be set off in the entire Covenant fleet, and everything else in the space, including the Halo, was supposed to be destroyed. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Just Master Chief just, you know, and said, you know what? I'm done. I'm cool. I saved the day here. I'm going to go ahead and check out the Halo. I'll see you guys later. That was pretty much it. That's pretty much it, you know. And then right back to the zombies again. Oh, I'm sorry, the flood. So
the flood was the weirdest part for me. Like, it, they're creepy in the game because it's the sounds that they make, and two, it's they're like deformities. But this one, it really was just a typical zombie, and they had the weird CG claw that came out. Like, it reminded me too much of Doom, you know, not really a terrifying flood creature. But
let me just say this. You want to see a good representation of the flood, my friend, on television? You want to see that?
Yes.
Go watch The Last of Us. That's a better representation of the flood than what was shown on Halo.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And again, just the him landing on the Halo, like, that was very anticlimactic.
Yeah.
You know, in the games, you go back, what makes, again, the intrigue of the game so great is that he crashes on this planet. Him and these Marines are battling out with the Covenant. Nobody knows what this thing is, why it's there. You get to have Cortana's like, oh, yeah, and the Forerunners, blah, blah, blah. You're getting like a history of all that. I don't know. They blew a perfectly golden opportunity to go into this next season strong, assuming that there is going to be another season.
And the 343 Spark was very feisty, very animated. had a lot of attitude in the video game. This was just like some dude telling another dude that just seemed like he was half asleep as a librarian in his job. And it was just, yeah, it was very disappointing, you know, coming off the high. And I really thought after that episode four, Josh, you and I were excited. We went on the show. We were both excited. We thought, you know what? They're finally getting it right. They're finally getting the Halo universe right. And then they immediately took a left turn to nowhere, my friend.
Let me ask you a question. All right. Looking at the ratings for this season and last season, do you think it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down for a renew?
I still think it's a thumbs up for a renew because it is one of Paramount's most successful shows. I have to see how well it does to Star Trek Discovery, which comes out next month as in its final season, and see how that rates. But from the initial numbers I've saw in Nielsen wise, I believe it came out as pretty good numbers, holding not too bad compared to season one. So I would say it is probably, and I say that very loosely, going to get a season three unless it is too expensive to make and they have to cheapen the budget. If they have to cheapen the budget, I think that's a problem because those early episodes, especially episode three or four, as far as the fighting, I thought was very good, very visually correct, and very close to the game. And I was highly complimentary of them on that. But I also think it's also very expensive. So in doing that, and even the last episode, for however little time it was on the screen, I would imagine what they created on screen as far as the Covenant versus the UNSC and that final, you know, ship to ship, you know, 50 ship battle type deal, 100 ships, whatever, how many ships on screen was not easy and cheap to make either. So I have a feeling if they do renew it, it might be a decrease in budget as well.
But here's the thing, like that show, as the story goes on, as you've seen from the games, the budget's going to have to keep getting bigger and bigger. So they're going to have to get in there and they're going to have to figure out their writing problem, because that's what they have right now, is a problem with the show's writing. And they, once that issue gets solved, I think that the ratings for the show will go up. I mean, I could be wrong, but also, you know, if you want something like this to succeed, you have to stop trying to be artistic with it and just show the story that the people are expecting.
And one more thing, Josh, try to you know, that John 117 know to keep the suit on the entire season. That might help.
I know that was I think he was only in that suit for probably about what, two out of the however many episodes that there were.
Yes. So yeah, just giving some advice to them right there. But it is Halo season two. We have our thoughts on it. What are yours? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
Oh, here you are. Well, that was pretty good timing. You're here and we're here.
He was just seminal to so many people.
Authentic and kind.
Teach you something and make you feel good.
Something very soothing, something very calming.
Fundamental in developing me into the human being that I am today.
You ask anybody in Canada, they know who he is.
It's hard to imagine anyone having had a bigger influence on my life.
It's the award-winning documentary, Mr. Makeup, The Magic of Make-Believe, available now on Amazon Prime Video. Well, 1/2 hour down, 1/2 hour to go here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Gerald Glassford, the guy behind Pop Culture Cosmos, Lakers Fast Break, and Inside Sports Fantasy Football. Please check out all of our latest episodes if you can. Melinda on Pop Culture Cosmos, Josh on Pop Culture Cosmos, plus also Chris Sardieri, Inside Sports Fantasy Football, and of course, Joe and the crew on the Lakers Fast Break. Go ahead and check out all my great shows. And speaking of great things you need to check out, Happy Hoarder Collectibles, wherever you get your social media. Josh lets you know exactly which shows he is going to be at, plus also as well, when he updates happyhoardercollectibles.com, he will put out the latest and greatest pop culture collectibles you can get out there. But Josh, before we finish off the rest of the show, any updates for the Happy Hoarder right now, my friend?
Yeah, we're doing a couple of Comic-Cons here in April. So hopefully that we had a little bit of a low streak happen recently. So we're hoping that'll bring us back to safer waters and, you know, make things a little bit easier for us and get us closer to that goal of opening that physical store here soon. And but yeah, I mean, as always, just keep following us and check out our website at happyhoardercollectibles.com. And we will be, you know, having some new stuff to announce here soon enough.
I want to tell you a story about a store here in Las Vegas. It is not Retro City Games. Retro City Games does an outstanding job. It's the leader in retro classic games and toys. So go ahead and check them out, Retro City Games. And I'm hoping to hear more about hopefully a new location at some point in time down the road once they get it, because they are leaving their Town Square location, but they still have their awesome place in Henderson. But there's another store. Remind me, Josh, next week. Please, 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 please remind me next week to tell you the story about a store here in town that I went to. It's longstanding, even as I think it's just as old or older as Retro City, and how not to do a video game store. I just want to tell you exactly, you know, that's just very misleading to the public and how they do things at the store. I can't tell you the name of the store out of respect to them, but I'm not very happy the way they go ahead and have things out there. And I'm hoping that when you start a store, you will not do the same. So remind me, please, to go ahead and go into it next week, because I know we won't have enough time today.
Okay, you got it, man. I'm intrigued. I will.
All right. Please remind me. Please, please, please. It is Gerald Glassford along with Josh Peterson. Thank you so much for joining us. Want to go ahead and mention Masters of the Air, which recently finished its run on Apple TV+. Want to go ahead and mention that, Josh, because it is based off the true story and true adventures of the 100th Squadron as far as the B-17 fighters, the big, huge flying fortresses that you know, was responsible for so much, you know, as far as World War II is concerned. The thing, though, is, Josh, I don't know how much is true and not true in the adventures that they recreated for television. This one is famous for, you know, having a pretty good cast as far as concerned, as far as, you know, Barry Keoghan, and of course, Austin Butler. You know, Austin Butler is one of the hottest actors on television right now, as far as coming off of Dune Part 2, Elvis, and now this. The thing is, though, I do things I like and do not like about Masters of the Air. The thing I liked about Masters of the Air, obviously the visual effects, and when they actually portrayed the air battles, because they had to show it from a unique position, because the B-17s are actually, you know, they're bombers. They're not actually fighters. They would have to show a lot of gunplay from the, you know, manned stations inside there, similar to what you would see maybe in a Star Wars realm. They had to show those type of camera angles and whatnot. And it showed you, you know, how, you know, the dangers and perils they went through. The visual effects on that was outstanding. The boldness in, you know, two of the main characters, one being killed off early in the series and the other being gone for a long period of time off screen. And these were two of the more well-known actors in the series, I thought was a really bold move. You don't see actors that are featured in the, you know, opening credits, you know, the stars per se, and continuously throughout the series, things like that done to those actors, you know, for the most part. Usually they have to, if they're like in the, you know, first few seconds or few, you know, 20 seconds of the opening credits, they're going to live throughout. So yeah, it was kind of, you know, interesting to see that. But when the bad thing is about the Masters of the Air was the fact that it's that halfway through the season, it turned from an air reliant or air battle focused series to a prison break series, where in the last 3-4 episodes, they were focused more on that and really never got back to an air battle per se ever again, outside of just small moments. So if that's the case, why call it the Masters of the Air? That was really what was frustrating to me, is by the end of the series, I was asking myself, why the name calling it Masters of the Air when you only devoted half the season to being in the air, Josh?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was wondering about that. I was wondering if eventually they're going to tell that story, you know, tell a story about them being captured or the plane crashing or whatever might happen.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They showed a lot of that. And then they showed a lot of being captured. And then they showed a lot of being in the prison camps. And they showed the horrors of being in prison, which is fine. Absolutely fine to show what the realistic version of that was like. It was not like Hogan's Heroes. And it was not, you know, something much darker and something much more perilous than that. falling behind enemy lines and all that. But
yeah,
just don't name it Masters of the Air. Name it the 100 Squadron. Name it something else that's more appropriate, because it's kind of misleading in that way. But otherwise, it was pretty good for what it was. It was compelling. And again, those first four episodes, the visuals were simply outstanding.
Okay, so my question to you is this. I know Tom Hanks had been planning this for a while, because it's supposed to be a, much like The Pacific was a spiritual sequel to Band of Brothers, or a side-by-side story, I guess. Mm-hmm. Masters of the Air is supposed to be a spiritual sequel slash side-by-side story to both Band of Brothers and The Pacific. So does it feel like either of those shows, like that, like gritty and emotional, or does it just come across as, overproduced television?
I think it's a little overproduced. I think they try to bring the emotions into it. I think the actors themselves tried to go ahead and convey that emotion and convey how, the feelings of it and the camaraderie in there. But I just never got the same kind of, emotions that I saw Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers, at for the time, maybe it's because it was the time that it was in and we weren't jaded by 15,000 hours of streaming television that's at the ready or anything like that. We just had TV, DVD, and movie, and the big films at that point in time. Our selections were less limited, were more limited at that point in time. So maybe that's why Band of Brothers was more compelling at that point in time. But I'd say it was good. It doesn't reach, it never reaches that this is great or this is compelling or this is truly memorable for me. But again, it's not, I do not want to dissuade or put back anything that those individuals suffered through in real life. It does tell a story that is good to follow through. It's just, again, Masters of the Air, you're coming in thinking, if you're not knowledgeable at all about this, you're thinking about how it's a air based show, and it's not that. It's something much different, or something a little different than that. And unfortunately, it, for me, the story was compelling, but just not enough to put it at the level of a Band of Brothers, if that makes sense.
Okay, because that's what I was wondering. I mean, that I wanted to watch the show strictly based on the fact
it's
that
good.
I really enjoyed Band of Brothers in the Pacific. I remember working at Best Buy. You remember, like, there was once a year HBO shows would go on sale, right? They'd give us this shipper, all the shows would be like 50% off, you could buy all the DVDs and stuff. So I remember picking up both Band of Brothers and The Pacific and watch them over the course of a couple of weeks, and just being absolutely blown away by how amazing these things were and just how sad they were. So that's what I was hoping to get out of the this new one. So I don't know. I'm going to give it a try. If you say it's good, then I'll take your word for it and watch it. But yeah, I don't know. Like, hopefully they just don't make shows like that anymore. So I was kind of hoping that this would scratch that itch a little bit.
It's good. I'd give it about a 7-ish. So I think it's good. I just think it could have been something more, or if I would have been led in differently than Masters of the Air, maybe I was coming out of it expecting something different, if that makes sense, my friend. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So what, I mean, if you had to rate this series out of a 10, where would you,
I'd say
put on
7. I put 7.
All right, yeah. So middle of the road, decent.
Yeah, middle of the road, decent. But you saw something as far as Netflix is concerned with The Gentlemen, because I know you are also being not only our Game of Thrones House of the Dragon expert, not only our Alien expert, you're our The Gentlemen expert as well, because of, Guy Ritchie and your fascination with Guy Ritchie films. He's decided to dip his toes in the water with a Netflix series based off of his hit movies, The Gentlemen. Your thoughts on Gentlemen on Netflix?
I am really digging it. Okay, so I don't know if we ever talked about this. Did you watch the movie with Matthew McConaughey?
I watched the original. Did not watch the sequel.
Okay. Well, I think this show is the sequel to it.
Isn't there something else based in the world of The Gentlemen, I thought, after he made that?
I think there's only, I don't know, it's possible it was like a short film or something. I'm not 100% sure. But okay. What did you think of the movie itself? What did you think of the film?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was okay. I wasn't as high on it as you are. You are a much better fan of it. I thought it was well acted, but I didn't think it didn't grab me. I think the way that it really, really grabbed you, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this goes back. I know we argue about King Arthur all the time or whatever, but I go into Guy Ritchie films expecting like Guy Ritchie style storytelling. You know, I love the way that the cuts are matched with the music. I love the way that the acting, like the dialogue is delivered quick, you know, and there are no two characters that are the same in his movies. And there's just something about criminals doing dumb things that it's funny. And this is what I went into Aladdin expecting, because, you know, Guy Ritchie did Aladdin and they absolutely Disneyfy it. You can see where his directing style was, and Disney was like, no, that's not going to work for us. So that being said, The Gentleman on Netflix, a series, I think everything that makes Guy Ritchie's film so great. Everything from it's like he pulls out all the stops from every film he's ever made over the span of his career and uses all the tricks to create this show. So granted, I'm only in episode 2 right now, but you know, so far it's got everything. It's got the music, the cuts to the music, it's got the fast talk, the fast dialogue, it's got the you know, scary villains, it's got literally everything, and you know, the idiot that is always present that makes all the situations worse. It's got everything that makes a Guy Ritchie film or even any type of film about criminals great. So I don't know, you know, what everyone else's schedule is like out there, but I definitely recommend you don't sleep on The Gentleman, because so far it has been probably one of the best pieces of streaming television that I have watched in a very long time. And I'm not just saying that as a Guy Ritchie fan. My wife is enjoying it too. You know, she's not as into Guy Ritchie stuff as I am, but I think that it is going to possibly merit another season so far.
We'll see what happens. I confused Wrath of Man, because this Jason Statham movie was made afterwards. Sure. In that ilk, as far as The Gentleman, it doesn't seem like it's too far beat off of what The Gentleman was. But yeah, I will go ahead and see if I can give it a shot. It is The Gentleman. I just finished Three Body Problem, which we'll talk about here in a sec. So yeah, I should have some time on my Netflix slate for The Gentleman. So if you have thoughts on The Gentleman, gets high ratings from Josh, will it get high ratings from you? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. Don't touch that dial. Wait, do people still use dials?
If you're in the Las Vegas and Henderson areas and are looking to buy, sell, or trade the best in classic or current video games and pop culture collectibles, there's no better place to go than Retro City Games. From Xbox to PlayStation, Nintendo to Atari, the great crew at Retro City Games provides the best place to go for all your gaming options. Stop by their two awesome locations in Henderson and also the Las Vegas Strip, or follow Retro City Games on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest deals and new items. Without a doubt, there's no better place to go for your gaming needs than your friends at Retro City Games.
Speaking of Netflix, the big show release of the month, besides The Gentleman, was Three Body Problem, based off the hit book series and then previous Chinese adaptation. This was changed to market it to a more international audience. It is something as far as sci-fi. And this is good to see sci-fi getting out there in so many different ways, as far as different stuff outside of the Star Wars universe that's being shown out there. It is an alien takeover movie in its central concept, but it's a long ways coming. And I just, if you're familiar with the book, I'll just leave it at that. But I don't want to go into too much spoilers, Josh. The guys behind the Game of Thrones.
Yeah, this is the first thing they've done since Game of Thrones, if I remember correctly. Can you actually just rewind for a minute? Tell me in 3 or 4 sentences, what is this about? Because I keep seeing... We went to the Dallas Stars game last weekend, and I saw a big poster for it. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that that was a thing, and it was very intriguing. Just give me a quick summary of what this show is about. You don't have to spoil anything. Just like,
okay, I can tell you what the trailers basically, detail several scientists killing themselves, for lack of a term. And there's Benedict Wong is trying to research why that is. And it leads into a larger investigation, leads into possible, technology that we're not familiar with, could lead to as far as aliens, as far as it's concerned, that they told you in the trailer that it might lead to as far as it's concerned. So I will say it is very broad in scope. It is very ambitious. The guys behind the Game of Thrones have been very ambitious with what they have set out to achieve. The problem is a lot of it shoots over the head of the average viewer, and it shoots over the heads of a lot of viewers in general. It is not the easiest show to follow, but I will say the dialogue between characters is fantastic. I really think the writing between characters is fantastic. Rosalind Chow, a legend in the industry who you might remember from Star Trek Deep Space Nine and MASH, plays a key role in this film, and she is absolutely fantastic. Benedict Wong eats up every scene that he's in. He is absolutely fantastic. There's a scene in an interrogation room between every time she's in an interrogation room, it's the best part of this series. I'm just going to tell you that. It also deals with an Oxford Five as far as five scientists or five scientific graduates from Oxford that remain friends, and the paths that they've taken and how some lead some ways and some leads others. Some of them really aren't necessary. Some of them really are just there. And even though they try to loop them in, they don't do a great job. The guys behind the Game of Thrones of looping it back in. I think some of it was just so ambitious and so out there, Josh. They put all the stuff out there throughout the first few episodes of the series, and they try to tie it all back in. And in doing so, they left some loose knots. Plus, a couple of the episodes, the latter end, have some really bad special effects. And for something that was reportedly made for $20 million each an episode, so you can guess the math, 9 episodes, that'll tell you it's almost $200 million. I was really surprised at some of the bad, very bad special effects in 2 of the episodes. But otherwise, again, it is very ambitious what it does. It is very compelling at times. And the character dynamics, as far as the dialogue between each other at times, is absolutely outstanding. And I say for those moments, you should check this out. It is somewhat gripping at times, and I do recommend it. I would put it in the same as surprising to me as, in a way, in a positive way, as Masters of the Air was, as far as in a little bit of a disappointing way, but they both get a ride around the same score, 7.5, I would probably say, as far as out of 10. So overall, I would recommend it as a watch. It's just so ambitious a tale to tell over the course of one season, and it looks like they're setting you up for another, that I think that maybe they should have just been able to tie some things in a little bit better and left some things out.
You know what? I have so much admiration for anyone that can both write a science fiction novel and create and produce a science fiction show, because like you said, there are so many moving parts in these stories that it's, how do you know if you've created something that you haven't finished, little subplots? How do you know that you haven't put a tight little bow on everything that you've done? I would be terrified if someone said, hey, will you write us a Blade Runner book? I would probably say no, because I would be afraid that I would ruin it, So I look at something like this, and if it seems very complicated, as you've explained it, I mean, you didn't explain it being complicated, but the story seems complicated. So I'm saying
it is very complicated at times. It does. It has a hard time explaining itself, and it goes above the viewer's heads quite a bit.
Right. So I sit here wondering, like, oh, how difficult is it to put something like this together? I'm sure there's so many moving parts in it that you forget that one of them's moving by the time you wrap things up. So I don't know.
It doesn't wrap things up everything well for season.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there.
Yeah, so I mean, I have all the admiration in the world, and I definitely want to watch this because I've been super curious about it. So it's going to be on my list after I finish The Gentlemen, but it definitely looks cool. And as we said before, we hit a really dry spell when it comes to science fiction shows and movies for a while, so it's good to see these things coming in again.
It is, of course, Three Body Problem. I have watched it. I give it a pass. I give it a as far as a solid score overall, and I think it's worthy of a season two. Whether or not they want to fit the bill for it, that's another thing, but that remains to be seen. But if you've seen Three Body Problem, let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. I did want to mention Shogun real quick. Shogun is amazing, but it's not finished yet. So hopefully when that season ends, if it does come to season, or if they're so far, amazing. Absolutely amazing. So please, if you have not watched Shogun yet, please watch Shogun. It is, of all these shows that I'm talking about here, it is the best, and it's not even close. And I'll leave it at that. But before we head on out, my friend, I just want to touch on X-Men 97, A Return to Glory for Disney Plus Animation, and Roadhouse on Amazon Prime with Jake Gyllenhaal. It's so funny, my friend, because I got to the point where I was turned on both at the same time, and I thought it was watching two cartoons, because Roadhouse, the remake of the 1980s, very cheesy action pick, which actually in a good way, and is fondly remembered with Patrick Swayze. Despite Jake Gyllenhaal's best efforts, I want to say this is a miss for people out there. I thought it brings about a lot of 80s cheese for me and a lot of 80s nostalgia. It is directed by Doug Liman, who did the Bourne movies, and as far as some other movies as well. And I think this is not one of his best efforts. I think that this reminds me of a lot of 80s cheese and 80s nostalgia, but not in a good way. It is you could have thrown this exact movie back, paired it up with the 80s movie, and gotten the same exact thing. And again, Jake Gyllenhaal, he tries so hard. He comes off very well, but everybody else is cheesy, over the top, bad story. Acting for the most part outside of Jake is below average or below. And yeah, it's really not worth your time. Again, I put it next to X-Men 97, and I watched both for a couple of minutes. I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching two cartoons. Both are cartoons, and it was really bad. X-Men 97, though, does get a lot of praise for recreating brilliantly the revival, as far as what the 1990s Fox animated series did. And I think they did a great job at that. Any thoughts, my friend, before we hit up Ghostbusters and our last topic before we hit on out?
Yeah, absolutely. The Roadhouse surprised me that they're remaking that one. I actually saw a poster for The Outsiders, and I was, because that also had what's his name, the original Roadhouse guy, Patrick Swayze, was also in The Outsiders. So I'm like, oh no, they're gonna ruin The Outsiders next. But it turned out it was just a Broadway play. Anyways, just it seems weird that they would go back and redo Roadhouse. I don't think that
nothing seems weird to me anymore on that.
Yeah, that's true. Because I don't think like Roadhouse was it has its following, but I didn't see it being like a phenomenon at the time that it came out. And as for X-Men 97, I do want to watch it. I like all kids, I have vivid memories of waking up in the morning and checking it out on Fox Kids on Saturday morning. So yes, I do want to go back and watch it.
I think they did a great job. I will give them the highest compliments on that. But before we head on out, my friend, we want to face the franchise real quickly on Ghostbusters, with Frozen Empire doing right around what the previous installment did. It looks like it still may have a life going forward. May. I didn't say it would, but I said may. Your thoughts, my friend, because the whole series has had its ups and downs. Do you think the Ghostbusters series should continue? After Ghostbusters 2, I think a lot of people jumped off that bandwagon, or jumped off the Ecto-1 per se. They tried to revive it with the 2016 all-women cast. I know a lot of people were very hard on that. I think a little bit unfair, because I did see it in theaters. I don't think of it as too bad. In fact, I think of it more fondly than I do Ghostbusters 2, but need I digress in that. So now you've got Ghostbusters Afterlife, with everybody got the warm and fuzzies again, and now Frozen Empire, which has got mixed reviews, but our Twitch viewer just said he liked it and enjoyed it. Your thoughts on Ghostbusters? Do you think it has still a life left?
you would be stupid to not make more Ghostbusters movies. Because look at traditionally, right? Back in 1984, Ghostbusters 1 had a production budget of about $30 million, ended up bringing $295 and change. And Ghostbusters 2, same thing, ended up bringing about $215 million. So the production budget for these movies, as it's gotten higher and higher with each new one, but the returns have been beyond what's expected. So, I mean, you'd be foolish not to make more of these movies because they are profitable, while not, you know, nowhere close to bringing $1 billion a piece. I mean, it's still a lot of profit coming in for
these series movies. Just went over $1 billion, to give you an idea, this weekend as a series, yeah. Sony announced. So
they don't cost very much to make. It has a fan following, but they don't make in movie tickets, they make in merchandise sales. Look at the Ghostbusters plasma figures that were out when Ghostbusters Afterlife came out. They're selling for about $25 a pop, and you go on eBay now and some are worth like $80 to $100+. So I mean, you'd be crazy. Like, there's a whole realm of collectibles based on this franchise that are highly profitable. So again, yeah, I mean, you'd be stupid not to make more of these movies.
So we'll see what happens, but it is Ghostbusters. Tell us your thoughts on the Ghostbusters franchise as we face the franchise once again, popculturecosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode, but I wanted to go ahead and make sure you have the Kleenex on standby, because going to go ahead and make sure before we head it out, we honor one last time a good friend of the show, one of our biggest supporters ever for this show in the 8 years we've been doing this, Buddy Gold from Croc Community Radio. He passed away recently. Chris Dardieri, who worked with him on Inside Sports Fantasy Football, he shared his thoughts. Melinda, as a fellow Canadian radio personality, shared her thoughts on the PC Multiverse on Friday. So please check out those videos that are available on YouTube and also wherever you get your podcasts. But I wanted to go ahead and share our thoughts last of all, because our new buddy for 8 years almost, and just over the years, he's been a tremendous individual to deal with. But Josh, I don't think I shared with you the last conversation I have. I always told you when he said good things about our show, but
yeah.
The last conversation I had with him, and I got my Kleenex ready when I say this, he said, "Gerald, I just listened to a show of you and I." He said, "You two are so great together." And I said, "Thank you, buddy. Much appreciated." He said, "Not so, so. You should read it as so great."
Yeah. Yeah, no, man. Buddy, that was unexpected news. You know, I actually feel really terrible because he had reached out to me a couple of weeks back and he's just saying like, "Hey, it's great to hear you guys talking again." He's like, "The show's not the same without you." And I had every intention of messaging him back, but you know, it's just something happened and I did not respond to his message. So I never got a chance to, you know, tell him thank you or anything, but he's always been a huge supporter of us over the years. And he's always, you know, I always love looking in my inbox and seeing messages from Buddy. So it's heartbreaking, man. The world's definitely the world's definitely a lot more empty without him here. And, you know, he will be missed. He's always been one of our biggest supporters over the years. And he always, you know, reaffirmed us when we were thinking like, "Oh man, are people still listening to the show?" And we get messages from Buddy saying like, "Hey, you guys are doing great. Keep on keeping on." And I was always super grateful for that.
Thank you, Buddy. Wherever you are, my friend, and rest in peace.
Yeah, thank you.
So that'll do it for us. But Josh, again, been a great show. You know, wanted to go ahead and thank you so much for being here, my friend, for so many years doing this with me. But any last thoughts before we head on out?
No, I think we have covered it. I, you know, going into this second half of the year, I think hopefully there's going to be a lot more things to talk about here in relation to, you know, video games and movies, because we're moving into the summer and before we know it, the holidays will be here. And I think we're going to be getting some big announcements, hopefully, before that happens. And you know, there's always pop culture stuff out there and people like Buddy to help make sure people get a chance to listen to it.
So whenever you get a chance, please go ahead and give a like to Croc Community Radio, and any chance you get, please like, follow, and support us here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the Pop Culture Cosmos. Thank you for listening. And rest in peace, buddy. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.